Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Hey, New York City, you're listening to Revolutions Per Minute live from the WBAI studios, where, as Reggie mentioned, all the mistakes are pretty cool. And I am joining you from Bed-Stuy. My name is Lee Zishi. I use she, her pronouns. And RPM is a socialist radio show and podcast from members of the New York City Democratic Socialist of America. The DSA is the largest socialist organization in the United States, with 56,000 members nationwide, and NYDSA is its biggest chapter. We are run by our over 5,500 plus members and organizers who are working together to build a democratic socialism in all five boroughs. Just last week, New Yorkers defeated the Williams Fracked Gas Pipeline, a massive climate victory, and also a victory for National Grid ratepayers, who would have been the ones who would have been stuck footing the bill for that pipeline. New York City DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group members were crucial allies in that fight, turning up the heat on corporate utility National Grid in the final year of the fight with calls for public power. Today, we're going to be talking with Jen and Daniel, both from the Eco-Socialist Working Group, about what, you know, how that work is continuing and their statewide campaign to fight for ratepayer rights through a utility strike, as well as how they are building eco-socialism instead of eco-fascism. But first, we have the headlines with Simone Norman.
A city council bill that would provide single hotel rooms to homeless New Yorkers was called reckless by the Department of Social Services. The comments came after the city and New York Post published photos of overcrowded sleeping conditions near homeless shelters after the subways began to expel people at 2 a.m. New York's response to the COVID-19 disaster was marred by missteps from Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio, and exacerbated by the notoriously poor working relationship between the two men, according to a report by ProPublica. Multiple police unions are pressuring Mayor de Blasio to fire the city's health commissioner, Dr. Oxyris Barbeau, over a comment she made in March in response to NYPD officers demanding more masks. The pressure comes amid a growing rift between de Blasio and the city's health department, with the mayor increasingly relying on Dr. Mitchell Katz, head of the city's public hospital system. A group of incarcerated people in a privately run prison are suing GEO Group, the corporation that runs Queens Detention Facility, for allowing a COVID-19 outbreak that infected over one-fifth of inmates. Advocates have been pushing Governor Cuomo to loosen release criteria for incarcerated people across the state. City Limits published an account of the ongoing crisis at Rikers Island from a public defender affiliated with Queens Defenders. The mayor announced an additional 12 miles of open streets and 9 miles of bike lanes on a temporary basis. Many safe streets advocates were unimpressed with the size and location of the street closures, as many New Yorkers are planning to seek open space in warmer weather. On Friday, the mayor announced a retooled summer cooling plan focused largely on subsidizing air conditioning. A citywide expansion of participatory budgeting scheduled for June is likely to be canceled due to the fiscal fallout of COVID-19. And in election news, midnight last night was the campaign deadline for candidates for New York State office. Jacobin profiled the NYC DSA's slate of candidates for State Assembly, State Senate, and Congress. You can donate to the slate DSA for the Many at their website. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez failed to secure the Working Families Party ballot line in November's general election after a successful legal challenge by Michelle Caruso Cabrera, her right-wing Democratic primary challenger. And finally, The Intercept and analyzed two New York City congressional races, where multiple challengers risk splitting the vote and reelecting incumbents Yvette Clark of Brooklyn and Elliot Engel of the Bronx.
By The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by New York City DSA Electoral Working Group covering local politics and radical activism. You can subscribe at thethorn.nyc. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener sponsor WBAI. I'm Lee Zishi. I use she, her pronouns. And today we're joined by Jen and Daniel from the Eco-Socialist Working Group. We're going to be talking about how the Eco-Socialist Working Group within the New York City DSA has really been leading the charge statewide in calling out our private utilities, corporate utilities, Con Ed, and National Grid. We've had a lot of shows about different strikes going on. You know, we've talked about striking workers, and we've also talked about rent strikes. But another campaign that is being organized is utility strikes. And, you know, a lot of New Yorkers right now are struggling to pay all of their bills, and utility bills are one of them. So the New York City DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group has been working in a statewide coalition to begin organizing for utility strikes. And so soon we are going to have on Jen and Daniel from the Eco-Socialist Working Group to talk about what that organizing looks like, and what they've been doing to alert people about what National Grid and Con Ed is doing. And I think we have them. I think we have them both on now. Jen and Daniel, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, guys, we did it. We got live radio going during a pandemic, but luckily we're all organizers here, so we know how to like go with the flow. So just to catch you guys up, we've been, you know, introducing the show to our amazing listeners, but now I would love to introduce you to our amazing listeners as well. Jen, can you talk a little bit just about how you joined DSA and some of the work you've been doing with the Eco-Socialist Working Group?
Sure. Also, thanks so much for having me. My name is Jen Jantana Pichie. I use she, her pronouns. I live in North Brooklyn, where I'm technically part of the North Brooklyn chapter, but I actually only joined the Eco-Socialist Working Group quite recently, and I've been kind of skirting around DSA for a few years now. I work at Sixth Street Community Center, where I'm their program director, and we have a lot of Lower Manhattan DSA meetings there. So I'm pretty familiar with the work DSA does, but only officially joined like in the past year or so, and have been co-hosting the Public Power Hour with Daniel.
Yeah, it's funny that you say you just joined the Eco-Socialist Working Group, because you're so involved in so much of the organizing. It feels like you've been around forever. And we also have Daniel back on the show. He's a second-time guest, I think, now. We did a great episode about public power that you can check out if you haven't already heard it on our Simplecast. But in case people missed that episode, Daniel, could you quickly just introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, sure. My name's Daniel, use they, them pronouns. Yeah, I've been in the working group since last July or so. And since January, I've been on the organizing committee, which is just kind of the elected body that runs the working group, basically, and plans the meetings. Yeah, and I've kind of been, you know, involved in, you know, leftist politics since Occupy Wall Street, basically. But it wasn't until after the 2016 election and DSA really blew up that I really felt like I had a home politically speaking. I had always kind of felt like, you know, there wasn't an organization that really just believed in what I believed in and was advocating and building power in a way that I thought was really important. So yeah, I organized up in Ithaca for a while. And then when I moved back to New York, I started organizing with eco-socialists because I, you know, climate change is the greatest issue we face right now. And also just because I'm a teacher and I found out that there was a peaker plant, natural gas peaker plant by the school where I was teaching. And I found out that my students were like literally being poisoned by the burn of fossil fuels, which has a measurable impact on students' performances. And these were all first-generation kids, children of immigrants, and their parents had come to this country because they wanted to give a better life for their kids. And that future was literally being taken away from them by the burning of fossil fuels. fossil fuels. So we talk about climate change in the future, but the impacts of climate change are affecting us now, and it is affecting the most vulnerable people. So I felt like I had a calling and a duty as a teacher to get involved.
Yeah, it was also frat gas that kind of led me against capitalism into eco-socialism in DSA. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com, and you can find us on our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. You know, listen to those past episodes that we had Daniel on, and you can find us on Twitter at NYCRPM. Today, we're talking about utility strikes. So, Jen, I'd like to throw the first question to you. You know, what is a utility strike?
Yeah, sure. So, to put it most simply, a utility strike involves a mass movement of people who are building collective power by together not paying your electric or gas bill. And for some people, this also might include utilities like water and internet. But in the state of New York, our utilities are privately owned by mega rich companies that power different regions of the state, like kind of like a monopoly. And if you live in New York City, your utilities are owned by Con Edison and National Grid. And for most of us, if we want electricity or gas, we have no choice but to be locked in as customers of theirs. So by not paying your utility bills, we are effectively withholding profits from these energy corporations. And this is really critical in my mind because these corporations are really continuing to increase New Yorkers' dependency on fossil fuels. As Danielle said, when we were living in a climate crisis, and they're grossly profiting off of that. Also, refusing to pay our utility bills through a strike is a tactic that can be used to build solidarity and really leverage pressure on our elected leaders to win our demands, which for the public power campaign is to cancel utility bills and the debt that accrues without passing the cost onto us, the ratepayers. And I think, you know, in order to effective, sorry.
Oh, no, no. Ahead. I was just going to kind of say, you know, why is DSA, you know, calling for this utility strike now? But continue also, if there was another thought before then, go for it.
Yeah, I was just going to add on, which I think relates to your next question, is I think that in order to effectively mitigate the causes of the climate crisis, one strategy is we need to mandate, you know, 100% renewable future, as we also outline in the public power campaign.
This moment now, you know, of a global pandemic, a health crisis, but also this economic crisis. You know, as you mentioned a lot of the underlying things. But why, you know, in this moment is DSA organizing a utility strike?
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, the pandemic poses like more layers of crisis on top of crisis. I think before coronavirus, millions of New Yorkers were already living paycheck to paycheck with the high cost of housing and just living in the city. They were already living a reality where they were struggling to pay their bills and make ends meet. So now that we are living life under the jurisdiction of the coronavirus, we've learned that 1.2 million New Yorkers have filed for unemployment, and this number was only as of April, so it's possibly higher now. And we really have a situation where well over a million New Yorkers have lost their jobs and therefore are struggling even more than before to pay for essentials like food, housing, utilities. And we really understand that we need to cancel rent, mortgage, and utility payments because no one should be forced out of their home, you know, when they're being told to stay home. They shouldn't be forced into debt when they're told they can't go to work, and they shouldn't be facing dangerous conditions because we're unable to pay, you know, mega rich energy lords like Con Edison and National Grid. And we really feel that people shouldn't be taking an economic hit, that big banks and corporations like privately owned utilities can afford to do that. So that's why we are calling for that now.
Yeah, Daniel, is there anything you'd like to add on that? And maybe can you talk a little bit more, too, about the history of these New York City utilities, Con Ed and National Grid?
Yeah, sure. I mean, first off, I just want to say that a lot of people are not going to be able to pay their electric bills for the foreseeable future. Hopefully as short as possible, but we really don't know how long this pandemic is going to go on, and we also don't know how long the economic fallout from this pandemic is going to be. So when folks don't pay their utility bills, that can either be a political action or that can be a political action. And what we want to do is we want to tell people, hey, if you're not able to pay your utility bills, that's not your fault. It is the system's fault. And you need to say, hey, I am striking because this is a fundamentally unfair system. And we see that in the history of utilities in New York City as well. I mean, both Con Ed, National Grid, first of all, is a British company. It's not even an American company. That is pretty widespread in England. But Con Ed, you know, has a 100-plus-year history. And there are essentially these private companies that supply us with our power. The problem is that, first of all, they are incentivized. They only make a profit when they build out new infrastructure. So that means they're only... the only way they make profit is literally building fossil fuel infrastructure. So that's like a huge problem with this business model. Another problem with the business model is simply that they're a monopoly. These are natural monopolies. You cannot have two competing entities providing you with electricity or two competing entities providing you with natural gas. It just doesn't make any kind of sense why you're going to have two sets of power lines over the city. So when you have a natural monopoly, any private company is going to take advantage of that. And we see that with Con Edison. We see that with National Grid. Con Edison made $1.2 billion in profits in 2018, and of that, $850 million went directly to their shareholders. Both Con Ed is actually known as a dividend king. I think that's the term, because it's a company that just can always give out dividends to its shareholders. Because again, you have to pay your electricity bill, and you have to pay the rate that is set for your electricity bill. And that sucks, because it means that $850 million that went basically to, you know, private hands could have gone to lowering the cost of electricity. It could have gone to building out renewables. It could have gone out to fixing our grid. National Grid, actually, after the Williams pipeline was denied the first time, they actually refused to hook up new customers to their gas grid. And they lied and said that they didn't have capacity without the Williams pipeline. Which was not true. It was a complete lie. And when customers called National Grid to complain and say, like, hey, I need my gas hooked up, like, I just, you know, redid my kitchen, I need gas, or, hey, I just built, you know, this building of affordable housing and they need a gas hookup, National Grid said, oh, don't talk to us. Call your state senators, call your assembly members, call Cuomo, which is an example of a private company literally taking our democratically elected legislature hostage, which is insane. I mean, it's completely insane that something like that would happen. Both of these companies have a long history of corruption. Con Ed, especially, the blackouts that happened last summer were caused by the fact that they've like chronically refused to maintain the grid, again, because they have this profit motive. So when it comes to our private utilities, you really have two companies that are unaccountable to the public, and they are unaccountable by design, and they literally make a profit building out fossil fuel infrastructure. And that's a serious problem, and I don't really understand how that's defensible. The reason we really have this system is kind of, this is a legacy system from 100 years ago, and it's time to have an energy system that, you know, it works for the 21st century, works for the climate, and works for everyday people.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I think very clear that these utilities have been kind of feeling the heat, especially from DSA and the public power campaign that's been going on, as you said, I think for, you know, over a year now, or about a year. But, you know, in this moment, too, you know, that's legislation that would be passed. But right now, you know, it doesn't look like anything's happening in Albany. So, you know, I think it's really great how DSA has just, you know, pivoted to what this moment, you know, really requires and takes that into account. So I want to talk a little bit more about how, you know,
this organizing is actually happening. We, like I said, we've done some really great shows on rent strikes. We've done some shows about, you know, how workers are striking. And I think people out there are really interested in strikes right now and how they can participate. But first, let's talk about kind of the statewide coalition that's building this. Can you talk a little bit about that, Jen? And, you know, how you've been working with people who are also working, you know, for housing justice?
Yeah, so the Public Power Campaign partnered with the Housing Justice for All campaign to pair the rent strike with the cancellation of rent with the cancellation of utilities. So calling for a rent strike and calling for a utility strike, as well as the cancellation of mortgages. Like you said, it's a statewide coalition. Just some of the folks who were really instrumental in developing the toolkit and have been really active on some of the meetings that we've been having are like UHAB. There's Alliance for a Green Economy in Syracuse, Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition, the Energy Democracy Alliance, lots of DSA chapters in like Hudson Valley and Metro Justice up in Rochester. Yeah, it's kind of we're all over, and it's been great connecting with people across the state and just kind of hearing about some of their stories and their members and how they're organizing in different cities. Daniel, did you want to add to that a little bit?
Yeah, I just want to say, like, yeah, we've had this statewide coalition, you know, for a while now. It was kind of the original coalition that we had to win Public Power. You know, part of the reason that Housing Justice for All won, you know, the greatest expansion of rent laws in a generation was because they had a statewide coalition. So that's why when we realized, you know what, we're not going to win if we just organize New York City. We need to be organizing in Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, all over the state. And that's really important for winning. And I think it's coalitions in general are really important for progressives, for the left to win, because you need to find and work with people who are experiencing the same problem across the board. And you are just simply not going to win unless you have a broad coalition of people from all over the place working together, organizing their communities and bringing people together. To me, I think that's like the core of what socialism is. And I think you'll find that like all of New York City DSA's victories, from the rent laws to Amazon, to our elected officials, have all come from our reliance on coalitions. And I think that's something that's really important. So I'm really excited about our Public Power Coalition, and I'm really thankful that we have been able to pivot so quickly towards a utility strike. I think that's something that didn't necessarily have to happen. Like, this coalition could have just gone by the wayside. But I think it shows, you know, just really the power of a cohesive vision and a coalition where all members feel like they are democratic participants. This isn't a coalition that's like dominated by DSA or any other group. This is a coalition of equals who really feel that we need a public power system and feel really passionately about that and are willing to do a lot of hardcore organizing to get that done.
And what's kind of the moment that you're organizing to, you know, towards, you know, with the rent strikes? It's very easy. You know, most people, like, rent is due May 1st. Okay, that's like an easy kind of day to call everybody to go on a strike. But with utilities, like, everybody has a different day. You know, how are you kind of bringing this all together?
That's a good question. And the answer is, it's hard. A utility strike is hard to organize for that reason that you said. Utilities are not due on a single day the way rent typically is. And also, you know, landlords are much smaller. It's quite easy to organize an entire building and withhold rent and really cause financial pain to a small landlord. Con Ed is a much larger organization. So like I said earlier, I think that a lot of the idea behind this is the simple fact that people are not going to be able to pay utilities no matter what happens. We are going to see a wave of shutoffs happen when the shutoff moratorium is lifted sometime in the summer, which is, by the way, the most dangerous time to have shutoffs listed. And at that point, it's really important to say, to have this framework ready for people who are unable to pay their bills, to say to people, you know what, You are not paying your bills. You are striking. You need to see this as a political action. You need to organize with your neighbors, get them to stand in solidarity with you, and say to Con Edison, say to Governor Cuomo, say to National Grid, we can't pay our bills because of this pandemic, because our economy is in shambles, and the amount of support that is being given to us is pitiful. So we cannot pay, and we're not going to pay until we see some relief. So the target here is Governor Cuomo, who via the PSE, the Public Service Commission, which is the body that regulates utilities. Cuomo has quite a bit of power. He has enormous power, frankly. And so he really could just say, you know what, no more utility collections until this is over. He could forgive past bills. And that's really our target. And that's the goal of this utility strike. It is to cause financial pain to Con Edison, but it is also to create a critical mass that can show the governor that he needs to use, you know, frankly, the stupendous amount of power he has to provide real relief to people for these energy bills. Luckily, these rent strikes are already happening, and we're working with Housing Justice for All to kind of pair these things together, because you know what, if you can't pay rent, chances are you can't pay your utility bills either. So that creates a really helpful opening for us, because look, we're aware that rent is what is on people's mind, because rent is considerably more than utilities. So we are, you know, working with the folks who are organizing rent strikes to also say, hey, also do this utility strike, because you can't pay your utilities either.
Yeah, and yeah, I think that most clearly the demands that we're targeting at Cuomo is that we won't pay utilities until these demands are met, which are to cancel utility bills for the duration of the public health crisis, forgive the debt on unpaid utility bills since the beginning of the coronavirus crisis emergency, and the shutoffs, like Daniel said, and then also, which is really important, tax the rich to pay for all of this because they can afford to and New Yorkers can't. Sorry, I just wanted to add that in.
Yeah, no, that's super, super important. And, you know, if somebody is, they hear those demands, they're like, yes, that's what we need to be doing. I want to participate, support that. What's kind of their first step? I know, Jen, you mentioned a toolkit. You know, like, how do people get involved?
Yes, so there is a toolkit, and the Eco-Socialist Working Group just kind of unveiled it last week at our Eco-Socialist meeting, and the toolkit covers the most important bases, I'd say, everything from like what public power is to an overview of our demands, our strategy, some of the things that Daniel outlined, facts on utility striking and the risks that could be involved, some historical examples, you know, utility strikes that were happening in Mexico and Costa Rica, how to organize for a utility strike, and other tools and resources for next steps. And, you know, for someone who's interested in organizing a strike, I think the toolkit is really helpful and easy to digest. And yeah, I basically organized a lot of tenants in my building for, you know, ultimately a rent strike, but also, you know, writing a letter to the landlord and having a lot of people who can't pay their rent were kind of concerned by like the neighbors who could pay their rent. So getting neighbors who could pay their rent to stand in solidarity by not paying with some of the neighbors who couldn't. And I really see pairing a utility strike as like a easy next step. If you're already organizing a rent strike in your building, this is something that you can also propose in your building. If you already have like an established tenants association, or if you work in an organization and are working with tenants, maybe this is also another thing that you can introduce, is pairing the utility strike with the rent strike.
And I know, too, the Eco-Socialist Working Group, in order to educate people more about this and in a bunch of other issues, has been hosting something called a Public Power Hour, and you two all have been the host. Daniel, can you talk a little bit about some of the guests that you've had on the show and the topics you've been covering, and just how important it is to be having these kind of conversations with people right now, you know, the best we can virtually?
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, Public Power Hour kind of just came out of the fact that we needed a presence online because all this stuff. About what a Green New Deal would look like and kind of dove into that a little bit and connected that with public power.
Hey, Daniel, which is really important.
Our second episode.
Hey, Daniel, you're breaking up a little bit. I think it's like an internet connection.
We were talking about the upcoming round.
Hey, so it seems like Daniel was breaking up a little bit. You know, it's tough trying to get everything over the internet. We still have Jen on the line. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. We're also on all your favorite podcast apps. You can also find us on Twitter at NYC RPM. We were just hearing from Daniel with the Eco-Socialist Working Group about, you know, the public power hour. And we're going to actually get a little more into that in the second hour of our show. But before we kind of get into the second half hour of the show, which is about, you know, long-term building eco-socialism and fighting eco-fascism. Before we get to that, we're going to hear a brief interview with our other amazing RPM co-host, Jack Devine. He spoke with some of the DSA organizers who are organizing for religious socialism. So let's go to that interview with Jack, and then maybe we'll get Daniel back on the line after we hear from that.
Yo, what's good, everybody? This is Jack Devine, and I am here with Jesse Ortiz from the NYC DSA Religion and Socialism Working Group. We're putting together a panel on abolitionist organizing from multiple faith perspectives on Tuesday, May 26th. So, Jesse, can you tell our listeners, like, what is the primary purpose in holding this political education event? Why is it so important to talk about abolition from these multiple faith perspectives? Why building this sort of coalition is really crucial in the long term to achieve these political aims?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, we've seen, especially in this moment of COVID-19, just how unjust and inhumane our prison system is. And you can see any of the stats at Rikers or any other jail or prison across the country, just the inhumanity that people have to live with in these facilities. And so that's kind of gotten me and like other people in religious socialism talking more about what is the role of faith communities in kind of advocating for the rights of incarcerated people, for fighting against mass incarceration and incarceration in any form. And we're thinking about how can we just have a conversation kind of for different groups to kind of come across, across faith, across like between organizers and pastors and lawyers, and how can we bring together a lot of people who all care about abolition or decarceration and really want to figure out what it means and what we can do next. And so the idea is to talk about what decarceration or abolition means for religious communities. Like, why does it matter for people of faith coming from progressive traditions or different theological traditions? Why does it matter that we have the most people locked up in this country than any country in the world? And what can we do about that? And so it's really a conversation to talk about how can faith communities get more involved in abolitionist organizing, and how can people of faith or just people who are interested in working with these kinds of communities learn more about what's going on in New York and where we can take it going forward.
So when is the event again, just for our listeners, and how can they sign up and get involved?
Great. So it's Tuesday, May 26th at 7 p.m. So it's going to be, we have 7 to 9, and it's going to be on Zoom, of course. And so you can check the New York City DSA calendar. If you just Google New York City DSA calendar, it's May 26th. in the evening, and you can get the info there or check the Religious Socialism Facebook page.
Well, thank you so much, Jesse, for joining us on Revolutions Per Minute and helping to organize what is a really crucial event on abolition and coalition building. So I just want to thank you for joining us on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Jack. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. Today, we've been, in the first half of the show, we were talking about utility strikes and, you know, fighting for ratepayer rights. And now we want to get in a bit to kind of the larger picture, what's kind of happening in the environmental movement as we face this public health crisis. There's kind of been this refrain. We heard it from an XR group in the UK and a lot of other Extinction Rebellion groups kind of denounced it. But things like people are the virus. We've also, you know, Michael Moore recently produced a new, so-called environmental film that really talks about how we can't, you know, people are the problem. Daniel, do we have you back on the line?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're a little bit broken up, but I think we got you back. Yeah, I can hear
okay,
you.
Great.
So a lot of these refrains, you know, people, I saw the DSA Eco-Socialist, you know, working group retweet, like, you know, when people have that saying, you know, that people are the virus, that's something called eco-fascism. Could you kind of maybe talk a little bit about that and what the real problem is if people, you know, are not the virus?
Yeah, sure. It's been heartening to see that meme, which began as a tweet that said, like, you know, we are the virus, has been kind of mocked online and like, nature, we are the virus, and with like pictures of like Lisa Frank dolphin from the soldiers from the 90s. So that made me feel pretty good that this seems to kind of be being roundly criticized and mocked, this idea. I think that for a long time in the environmentalist world, there was individual people bore responsibility for environmental problems, almost like you know, the Christian concept of original sin or something like that. And that's really a silly, ludicrous, and dangerous idea because, you know, I didn't choose to grow up into this world, to live in this world where fossil fuels are being used, you know, to power everything. If you have a job and you have no public transportation, you need to drive a car, that's not your fault. None of this is your fault. These are all systemic issues. And I think it's important to point out that the push from the idea of blaming individual people for environmental problems, saying, oh, it's your fault that climate change is happening because you are, you know, living an inefficient lifestyle. That was an idea that was created by fossil fuel companies so that they wouldn't face the blame for climate change. And I think that's really messed up. And I think that for a really long time, that was the dominant idea, the mainstream view of the environmental movement. And you saw this in what they proposed, things like carbon taxes, which would literally put a price on carbon, which would mean that like everyone's fuel costs would go up. To me, it's like a crazy policy. I don't really know how that became like the main idea. And that's a really dangerous idea. And I think that creates kind of this sliding scale towards eco-fascism, which is basically this idea to be cleansed of, you know, dirty people. Those dirty people also typically happen to be, you know, queer people. I think that's a dangerous sliding scale, and you can really kind of, you know, neoliberal ideologies can kind of create a sliding scale. Yeah, it could create a kind of hope into eco-fascism, and I think that's super dangerous, and I think that's messed up, and I think that when you look at a lot of where the right wing has headed in the past couple decades, you see, you know, an increase in border walls. You see, you know, a real focus on prepper culture. That is, in a sense, eco-fascism, right? Like when climate change causes migrant crises, when instead of saying, you know what, we are going to open our societies to those who are fleeing from climate disasters, that response is, nope, we're going to build a wall, let them die on the other side of that wall. And that's super messed up. And I think that's something that, like, you are, as climate change becomes more and more impossible to deny, you are going to see an increase in those kinds of ideologies. And they don't belong in our society, period, but they especially don't belong in the environmental movement. And so it has been really great to see that kind of, like, we are the virus idea being routinely mocked online, I gotta say.
Yeah, and so, yeah. You know, you have this, all the reasons that you point out that are wrong about, you know, why this is not people that are the problem. This is capitalism. This is, you know, a systematic destruction of extraction that's happening. But so we also can't just be fighting that. You know, we also have to be building the good, which, you know, obviously as eco-socialist working group members, you believe that is eco-socialism. So maybe, Jen, can you talk a little bit about, you know, what the vision is, the positive vision, the thing that we're fighting towards coming out of this pandemic, and how that relates to things like a Green New Deal? And if you want to talk maybe a little bit, too, about, you know, we couldn't really hear from Daniel earlier, but how the Public Power Hour has been discussing these issues.
Yeah, so I'm not sure exactly like what part didn't get heard, but the Public Power Hour is the Eco-Socialist Working Group's new live stream show. And we've done about 3 episodes so far. Our first episode, we hosted the authors of A Planet to Win. And the second episode, we hosted organizers who are really leading the statewide rent strike. So organizers from Housing Justice for All, like Sia Weaver and Sumathi Kumar and Fabian Rogers and Marcella, who's also running for assembly. And then our third episode, we interviewed Farah Soufan Forest, who is a nurse who is also running for assembly. And so we talk about different topics that really intersect with climate and climate crisis and how these different things that we don't really think about, like housing and healthcare, are really related and really connected to why a Green New Deal is really critical. Sorry, just back to your question. You know, I think with the Public Power Campaign, we are really working to re-envision an alternative to our current capitalist energy system, and just recognizing that energy is really essential to modern life, and so it should be a human right in our modern day society. And we don't want for-profit energy companies like National Grid and Con Edison to really be profiting off this this right. And so we're looking to decarbonize, decommodify, democratize, and decolonize the energy system. And I think that the Green New Deal is just like I mentioned, it's really connected to a lot of other things. It has the potential to bring in tons of new jobs, to, you know, support a new robust economy, and, you know, tied into healthcare and housing. That's about what I'd add. I don't know if, Daniel, you want to add more.
I mean, I think that the question really just comes down to, like, do we create a society where we care for one another, or do we create a society where we, throw away all obligations to each other? I think that, like, you know, it's been really scary to kind of see all of these coronavirus protests, even though they've been small, but to really see people who, you know, demand to have society reopen, even though that there is a, you know, huge risk of themselves becoming sick, of their family members becoming sick, and of the people around them becoming sick. You know, that is, in a sense, a preview of the right-wing response to climate change, right? They're going to say, you know what, we don't want to do anything to change our society. The very idea of doing that, goes against what they believe. And that is something that I think that we really need to fight. And we need to show, you know what, there are plenty of resources for everyone. We can live sustainable lives. We can, you know, work together and cooperate with each other to make a society that works for everyone around us. And I think that's really the defining idea of socialism, the defining idea of eco-socialism. And I think that's a beautiful idea. And I think it stands in, you know, contrast to really the death cult idea that undergirds, you know, the far right in this country and around the world.
Yeah, and when you were saying, you know, talking about that, you know, that kind of like false idea of growth and, you know, the need for certain, like the need to reopen and keep growing the economy, it made me think of the argument of some of the people out in Long Island who were actually pushing for the Williams pipeline, you know, that big pipeline we mentioned in the beginning of the show. You know, they're like, well, the economy is not going to be able to grow without natural gas. And National Grid and Con Edison, you know, they talk about a shortage of gas, and it's always, you know, the areas they point to are areas that are, you know, currently being gentrified. You know, we learned in Queens, Con Edison was saying they need to expand a pipeline, and we found out the area that they say, you know, this part of Flushing, where this is why we need this expansion, well, it turns out they're, you know, have a stake in building big real estate there. You know, so the people that are saying, oh, we need to destroy the planet in order to keep up this kind of growth, like, what, who is that growth for? You know, it's such clearly for gentrifiers and not the people living in the communities where this infrastructure is being built. So I kind of want to pivot a little bit towards that. Jen, you mentioned, you know, decolonization as, you know, one of these major pillars of the Green New Deal that eco-socialists are organizing towards. And I know in addition to being in the eco-socialist working group, doing a bunch of mutual aid, you know, everybody, we need to give shout out to Jen because she is absolutely like organizing everywhere. You were in another group called Frack Out of Brooklyn that is fighting the North Brooklyn pipeline, which is a pipeline that National Grid is building from Brownsville up into their facility in Greenpoint, where they have a massive liquefied natural gas facility. Can you talk a little bit about the organizing that Frack Out of Brooklyn is doing and the North Brooklyn pipeline?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. So Frack Out of Brooklyn is an indigenous Black POC and ally-led collaborative of anti-capitalist housing, labor, environmental collectives, primarily based in North Brooklyn. And we're really working to fight against, like, with Sane Energy and the North Brooklyn Coalition, National Grid's construction of fracked gas pipelines, which we see as, you know, targeting working class communities of color, Brownsville, as you mentioned, Bushwick, all the way through Greenpoint. And we are actually working towards just kind of educating the community on this pipeline, because National Grid has been extremely sneaky about snaking this pipeline, already finishing phase 1, 2, 3, and now they're on phase 4, which is closer to my house. You know, I think as New Yorkers, we see just like a lot of construction on the street and we don't really think twice about it. But, like, for example, I only learned about this pipeline in November, and I was shocked that it was a fossil fuel infrastructure project. And I think that, you know, for someone who does environmental justice organizing, climate justice organizing, to only learn about it so late, I was thinking, like, I can imagine just someone who maybe isn't doing organizing, they probably don't even know that this is happening. So we're really working up and building towards a town hall, a digital town hall, of course, that's happening this Sunday on May 24th to expose National Grid and how their pipeline will ultimately hurt our communities, propel gentrification, which, you know, is really rampant around these parts, and will also increase our public dependency on fossil fuels, which is unacceptable when we are living in a climate crisis. And we've been working with Sane Energy and, as I mentioned, the No North Brooklyn Pipeline Coalition. So we're really excited about the event. And if you're interested in tuning in, you can probably find any of our orgs. So the orgs that make up FOBK are Indigenous Kinship Collective, Mikasa Noa Sukasa, Earthstrike, Mayday Space, University, and CNB, which is the org that I founded. And if you find any of our orgs on Facebook or Instagram, you can probably find information for the event there.
Yeah, and National Grid actually announced that they were starting construction up again of that pipeline. They had paused briefly because of the health crisis, but they are starting back up again the same day that the Williams pipeline was announced it was defeated. National Grid said they're starting up construction again. So just in these last couple minutes, I want to make sure that our listeners, you know, if they're interested in getting involved, in addition to the FOBK town hall, what are some ways that folks can get more involved in the organizing for utility strikes and with the eco-socialist working group?
Yeah, so I mentioned that if you look up any of the organizations, Indigenous Kinship Collective, Mikasa Nuwa Sioux Casa, Earth Strike, Métis Space, and CNB on Facebook, we're all co-hosts on the event. So I think if you go to the event section, you probably find it. If you want to join the eco-socialist working group or Public Power, we have a website, it's publicpower.nyc. The utility strike toolkit that I mentioned earlier is bit.ly/utility strike with a capital U and capital S. It is case sensitive. We're also collecting utility strike stories, which we feel is a really great way to leverage power and get the word out and apply pressure on Cuomo. And that's, if you want to share your story, it's bit.ly/utility strike stories, all lowercase. And then there's also, if you want to take individual action, there's a strike to pledge, which is bit.ly/cancel utilities with a capital C, capital U. And then, yeah, tune into the Public Power Hour, which is hosted. Danielle and I are one of the hosts, one of many, but hosted by the Eco-Socialist Working Group. And you can probably find Eco-Soc Working Group on Instagram or Twitter, and there should be some links to how to tune in then. We don't have a date for our next episode yet.
Any final thoughts, Daniel?
No, just you should definitely tune into Public Power Hour. I hope you become, you know, I hope, you know, you get involved with this. If you're going to take the step of utility strike, of doing utility strike, I think that's really great and a solidarity for me. And yeah, Lee, thanks so much for having us on. This was really great.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lee. We're going to have you on our Public Power Hour.
Well, these conversations,
the North Brooklyn Pipeline.
Yeah, well, these conversations are so, so important. It's why stations like WBAI are so important as well. You know, we are listener sponsored. No station, no radio station in New York City covered the Williams Pipeline as much as WBAI. Shows like Revolutions Per Minute, that was one of our very first environmental episodes. Shows like the Indie. So please, please, you know, sponsor, become a WBAI buddy, support this work that we're doing, you know, as we figure out this tricky work of doing live radio in the middle of the pandemic. Thank you so, so much, Jen and Daniel, for joining us. You've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI, and we will catch you again next week.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks so much for being on.